This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Into the show, the phone number is 503-231-8187.
And as always, we have a variety of music relevant to revolution and just generally changing the world for the better.
So right now, we're going to go ahead to the piece on Portland Rising.
It puts at risk my neighbors to the east of me that live at the tar sands. The government doesn't recognize these people, and these people have been dying of mysterious cancers. Their water is polluted. Their animals are sick, and Mother Earth is sick.
And we're here to make a difference. We're here to be in solidarity with all of us who understand that we have a very slim opportunity to make human life continue to exist, and that's our choice.
Groups opposing coal production, nuclear power, and hydraulic fracturing for natural gas participated in the protest, as did a number of interfaith organizations. Several smaller parallel rallies were held in cities across the country. Tens of thousands of people gathered on Washington's National Mall Sunday to urge President Obama to reject the controversial Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. Organizers of the Forward on Climate event described it as the largest climate rally in history. The proposed 1,700-mile pipeline would deliver tar sands oil from Canada to refineries in Texas. The Reverend Lennox Yearwood compared the rally to Martin Luther King's 1963 March on Washington for Civil Rights. The protest was organized by 350.org. The Sierra Club and the Hip Hop Caucus, among others. Speakers included President Obama's former green jobs advisor, Van Jones.
If you let this pipeline go through, Mr. President, the first thing it runs over is the credibility of the President of the United States of America. That's the first thing it runs over.
President Obama's former green jobs czar, Van Jones, Canadian Indigenous leader Chief Jacqueline Thomas of the Sekou's First Nation, traveled from British Columbia to attend Sunday's rally.
I am a mother of four and a grandmother of one, and I was raised by my own grandmother. She was a traditional medicine woman of my people. She was known as Dr. Sophie Thomas, and her words are still with me today. And what she told us was, when we take care of the land would take care of us. If we destroy this land, we will destroy ourselves. I'm speaking on behalf of the Yinka Dene Alliance from Northern British Columbia. And Yinka Dene translates to people of the earth. I am part of the Dene people from the northern reaches of the Northwest Territories down to my cousins, the Navajo of Arizona. We formed an alliance to stop the Enbridge Northern Gateway Project, which plans to bring tar sands oil to the coast of British Columbia, which will then be put on tankers to go to the Asian markets. The Yinka Dene Alliance is opposed to irresponsible, environmental damaging projects that puts our communities, our water, our culture, our land, our fish, our animals, and most importantly, our plants at risk.
Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org.
All that I ever wanted to see, was a movement of people to stop climate change, and now I've seen it. You guys look so beautiful. I've been meeting people all day. It's hometown heroes like our friends at CCAN. It's heroes like those people who've been blocking Keystone with their bodies down in Texas. It's people who understand that the fight against fracking and against coal ports and against taking the tops off mountains is ultimately the fight for a living planet. It's...
Those were some excerpts from the Forward on Climate rally that was held in Washington, D.C., organized by 350.org, among others. That was provided by Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman there. I'm here with Mike Lozier of Portland Rising Tide to talk about an action in solidarity that Portland Rising Tide conducted this Sunday at the Oregon Historical Society. The Oregon Historical Society currently has on exhibit some items from the local Esco steel plant, and Portland Rising Tide occupied the exhibit and proceeded to have an educational event about some of the aspects of Esco's products and the work that they're involved in. Thanks for coming and talking to me, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
So you guys were at the Oregon Historical Society on Sunday occupying the Esco exhibit. Tell me how Esco ties in with the Forward on Climate rallies and the nationwide actions.
Right. So there was a call for solidarity action around the country, either calling for action against climate change. Also, there's always a general call for action against profiteers, the tar sands, or in some cases, other extractive aid industries that are, you know, putting our climate in peril. So Esco actually has been kind of in the back of the minds of a lot of, I think, environmental activists in Portland in a while. They first came to prominent attention several years ago when they were featured in the USA Today as a large polluter towards one of our local schools and stuff. And there was a campaign for clean air that was initiated, and that campaign led to a neighborhood agreement between the company and Esco. This past year, though, this company has grown a lot. They've expanded their operations and resource extraction around the world, and have had local newspapers have been publishing and reporting on a lot of their press releases on this and doing spotlights on this company. And so, of course, this got our attention. And we noticed that they happened to be involved in everything that we thought was awful being done on the planet.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, for one, they manufacture machinery that's used for mining and for drilling for different resources. In particular, they recently purchased one of their suppliers in the Alberta tar sands region to increase their share in that area. This was over the summer, there was an article ran about how excited they were about getting more involved in this profitable project in the tar sands region, which, of course, is a huge national issue. We also saw that they make drag lines, which is used in mountaintop removal. And so, you know, we kind of were looking more into this, and, you know, they fly all up and down the Appalachian Range, these mountaintop removal projects. We also realized that this last December that they were looking to purchase a supplier in the Powder River Basin, which would be supplying the coal for the coal export projects in the Pacific Northwest. So it was this combination of things that, you know, it was a pretty good case against them for most of us, you know, and I feel like a lot of us were kind of chomping at the bit for an opportunity, you know, seeing that there was this call for a solidarity action had coincided with the start of this exhibit at the Oregon Historical Society featuring them. And this has been part of at least the culmination, as it seems, of this massive PR push that they've been doing recently, because they're working on a public offering going from a private company to a publicly traded company. I think it was last month the Oregonian ran an article about Esco and how they make a huge contribution to our local economy. They hired Eco Northwest to do economic impact analysis, which analyzed how much money they inject in the economy, you know, and what kind of activity that creates and stuff. And it's a pretty good size. So we went down to this exhibit a couple weeks ago, and, you know, they hired some PR firm, Henry V, to do this exhibit. And, you know, they just supplied them all the information to use in the exhibit and stuff. A lot of this stuff is just, you know, stuff on their website, basically. So what we saw was this glorifying of this, because they've been in Portland for like 100 years, you know, they're trying to create this, like, you know, sense of legacy about themselves, when really, like, the legacy that they were leaving on this planet was one that, you know, threatens the planet with catastrophe. You know, they basically supply, you know, these activities that threaten to do that.
So let's go to some of the recording that we made of that occupation of the Esco exhibit.
at the Oregon Historical Society and listen to some of the facts that you all were presenting that day.
You guys are probably all familiar with tar sands. I'm sure there's people here who actually know more about it than I do. But I'm just going to give a little brief rundown for people who don't know and maybe people at home who also haven't looked into this. Tar sands are they're considered unconventional oil or unconventional fossil fuels. It's actually a mixture of sand, clay, water, and bituminous tar. And extracting this requires actually clear-cutting boreal forests in Canada, which are some of the largest intact ecosystems left on the planet. So they actually just rip the whole thing, and they remove the topsoil, and then they have to pump massive amounts of steam into the ground so they can heat it and actually sort of rip it out of the ground. I mean, the entire process is 7 times more energy intensive than going after conventional oil. It's 3 times as carbon intensive. And then all the leftover wastewater from getting at this, from all the steam they have to pump in, it basically pollutes like tremendous amounts of water. There's like 60 square miles, what do they call it, a tailing pond, and it's full of toxic water. And just one of those is actually enough to fill Oswego Lake 76 times. So those are things that are then getting into the waters of indigenous peoples, and they're seeing, you know, cancer rates just skyrocketing. And they never gave them permission to actually extract this on indigenous land. So the Canadian government is just shredding the relationship of equality they had, giving them the right to fish and, you know, lead a traditional lifestyle and drink the water where they've been living for quite a long time. So how's ESCO involved in this? ESCO proudly lists 7 products on their website that are necessary for oil sands extraction. And the mining is actually so abrasive that the teeth on a shovel bucket that ESCO makes actually wear out every 2 or 3 days. So that's right in line with, you know, the business model. You want to actually replace everything very quickly. And they call these parts mission critical. So if they didn't actually keep replacing this, then the extraction wouldn't actually happen. Indigenous peoples are blockading railroads and highways and roads and disrupting people in shopping malls. So, you know, today I think we're all trying to act in solidarity with them. So
this last December, ESCO announced that they had purchased a supply company in the Powder River Basin in the hopes of expanding, you know, their market into the activity there and stuff. So they're heavily invested in the coal export proposals as well.
It just bears mentioning that ESCO isn't forced to make these decisions. It's not like they're forced into some market where their hands are tied and they have to do all these terrible mining operations. They actually just got out of doing turbines, which arguably, if you're a turbine manufacturer, depending on what they're doing it for, you could be making windmills, for example, right? Yep. You could be doing socially responsible engineering. You could be working towards a Green New Deal. And ESCO instead has decided that their way of making profit is going to be the most pillaging that they can possibly do in the short term to do it. So that's our local company, and these are the people that our leaders are going to brunches with and having nice business meetings and saying, yay, look at our captains of industry, like we're all friends, you know, and taking photos with. This is a big deal. So I was assigned fracking. So lest ESCO be left out of any kind of pillaging activity, last year actually they bought a company called Ulterra, which already sort of communicates like this, you know, Terra Earth, like this domination, Ulterra, for $325 million, a huge capital investment, to get into the fracking game. Ulterra does oil mining, they also do natural gas mining. People know the word fracking, right? People are familiar with it. It's becoming something. 100-something counties on the East Coast now have passed anti-fracking ordinances. And so these companies and the PR firms that they hire are going to war directly with communities to basically poison their waters. And how they do this, ESCO or Ulterra supplies the mining equipment. So you mine down into a water table. Basically, you have to get through a water table to get to the natural gas. And so that's a problem just because you're breaking up water tables. But then they lubricate their machinery with these proprietary chemicals and nobody knows what's in them. But later on you find out that people's water is being lit on fire when it comes out of the tap and people are getting sick and animals are dying. So these things that they're putting into the ground, nobody even knows what they are because we're not allowed to investigate them because of their proprietary holdings. But this is where ESCO wants to go with its business model. This is what it thinks is a socially responsible way of doing business. This is our Portland company, and this is what they want to do. So I just wanted to say that we know that this is not clean. We know this is not legitimate business making. This is, in 2013, that we even would celebrate companies like this is absurd. And when you see this being done anywhere in your community, the first thing you should do is just laugh out loud or shame people that do this. If your local leaders are having brunch with these people and treating them as socially responsible citizens, don't buy into that. It's just not true anymore. This is barbaric. It belongs in 200 years ago, the same with coal exports, and it just can't be done anymore.
A few years back, USA Today took this data from the EPA on toxic emissions in the country, and they actually correlated them with the locations of public schools. Mm-hmm. And they found out that Portland and public schools were actually some of the worst in the nation for their air quality. And every single school in Northwest Portland around ESCO was in the top 5% of the very worst air quality. They were at the highest risk for hazardous air toxins. And it turns out that ESCO was the number one reason for that. For all of those schools, they were the top toxic polluter. Immediately, ESCO was running defense, saying, look, we're really important to this community. You know, we do everything we can. Look at all this money that we spent to not pollute your lungs and give your kids cancer. You know, we're really sorry it's not enough, but, you know, we're really important to this community. And, you know, you need to understand that. And unfortunately, the DEQ was really on their side because the DEQ gets their money for their budget from polluting industries when they grant them permits, about 70%. And eventually, this community group called Neighbors for Clean Air forced them to somewhat reduce their toxic emissions. I think the deal was 20%. But it turned out they didn't really have to spend money to do that. They actually forced them to do an internal audit, and they found out like they could save money by just switching some things around and doing it differently. And so, you know, then this is how they define sustainability. If you read ESCO's website, they say we're sustainable because we cut waste in ways that save money. Now, if you can cut waste and save money, I can only think you were just doing it for fun the first time. You know, just for kicks. You all have cancer, and the world's not livable anymore. Ta-da! So, and you know, it's worth noting too that this was a really hard fought battle. It took years and years and years. They basically cut a deal so they wouldn't get sued and lose even more money. But as it turns out, they'd actually increased their emissions of things like lead by at least 20-fold in the past, like, 7 years, from, like, 2002 to 2009. So reducing it by 20%, you know, that's great and everything, but you're still everyone over. So it's not really appropriate. And, you know, I think we have to recognize as we try to change companies like ESCO that too many of the government agencies we think are on our side are really not on our side. Yep. If you follow the money and you find out they're basically in bed with the company, you've got to do a little something else. And sometimes that means taking direct action. It means talking to the workers and figuring out whether they really want to be poisoning children and destroying the planet that they grew up on.
I'm talking with Mike Lozier of Portland Rising Tide about the action that they held in solidarity with the Forward on Climate rally that was held in Washington, D.C. this Sunday, a local action that took place at the Oregon Historical Society to bring attention to ESCO Corporation and their hand in such projects as the Keystone XL pipeline, Powder River Basin coal extraction, which is a big issue here in the Northwest. And you all also talked Sunday about the fact that ESCO doesn't just operate in North America.
Right. They have operations all over the world, and they're also expanding at the same time. Particularly, they supply mining in Kalimantan, Indonesia, which has been subject to much deforestation. There's a lot of vital rainforests there, and it's being knocked down and cleared out, both for mining and palm oil plantations. In particular, though, the mining that's going on in that region, the operations are so big, particularly the coal mining, that it poses a greater threat to our climate than what the Keystone Pipeline or what the Powder River Basin coal projects propose to do.
So what do you mean by that? Just the net effect of that?
The amount of carbon that would be released and also the effect of the deforestation as well to sequester carbon has a cumulative effect to that. They in Indonesia, along with the deforestation, there's a lot of indigenous communities that are being violently removed and dispossessed from their land. It's a similar story too in parts of South America. Particularly, they have a few mines that they contract with the Vale Corporation in Brazil, in which people have died resisting the building of a mining railroad there. So this company is able to make a profit off the fact of how easy it is that, you know, state governments in these regions can be pressured to use violence to remove people from the land or hand land over to these companies.
So in an effort to bring attention to the activities of ESCO and to challenge their PR, Portland Rising Tide occupied the ESCO exhibit at the Oregon Historical Society. You had about 20 or 30 people turn out. One thing that I thought was really cool was how you all were mentioning that you were trying to challenge the legacy that ESCO was trying to create for itself. And while you were occupying the exhibit, you asked people to share what they hoped their legacy would be regarding the climate and the environment in general. And here's a couple of recordings that we made in the moment as the ESCO exhibit at the Oregon Historical Society was being occupied by Portland Rising Tide.
The legacy that I want to leave is a legacy where I don't have to worry if the kids at Chapman School, as they get to be older, are going to end up with cancers or God knows what other diseases because of what they're being exposed to now because of the pollution that ESCO's putting in the air that they're being forced to suck in because it's in their grade school. And they have to sit there for however long grade school goes every day. These kids are already at greater risk for things like asthma now. But my concern is what's going to happen for them when they get older. So my legacy is that we not have companies like ESCO that are just worried about the bottom line, not caring about our future generations and what's going to happen to them down the line.
Clean air and workers' rights.
Clean water everywhere.
I want to set a good example for everyone. I want to set a good example for all my ancestors. My kids know I'm here today. My grandchildren are too young to understand it. But I'm hoping that my daughter will pass this on to my grandchildren when they're old enough. Say, grandmother did this, and then it'll be passed down to them, to their children, and that they'll take the same actions when they're old enough to understand and pass it to their children. It'll just keep rolling through my generations. You know, it's the only way is to pass it on and make people understand in your family, because whatever I pass on to my family is like the ripple effect. It'll go through generations. People will raise awareness, all, you know, stemming from one person. One person can make a difference. And we're all one person here, and we're all making a difference by the ripple effect. So that's how I feel.
I'd like to make a note that ESCO back in the 40s made a lot of money off military contracting, and that a lot of what drives the seeking of tar sands oils is the military's need for oil, because it's the largest user that there is as an organism. You know, it's part of the disease, the whole militarism empire, you know, raping the landscape of the planet. It's all tied together. So if you stand against militarism, you stand against companies like ESCO, you stand against the nuclear industry, you stand against many things. And that's all embodied here.
Somebody famous recently, not very recently, said, let's be the generation that stops the tyranny of big oil. That was Barack Obama, but I think we need to be the generation that stops the tyranny of big oil. One of the upcoming opportunities to bring people together is the coordinated week of action to resist the tar sands pipeline. That's going to be March 16th through 23rd, and people can sign up to be in the loop about that. There's also some folks organizing locally to go down to Salem to fight the liquid natural gas export pipelines in Oregon.
Just as like a short-term goal in terms of legacy, I would love to be a part of a generation that got rid of this cloud of cynicism that hangs over everything all the time, where we make excuses for everything, and there's always somebody else's fault, and it's always somebody else's reason why I can't speak the truth. I mean, we're getting to a point now where it's dangerous to even open your mouth and say words that are literal and true, and if we can just take that stand as a first stand, I think that'd be great.
I just want to kind of point out, like, there's never really just one hero, like, ever. Like, a heroic action is always a collective action. And so I want to be part of, like, the little group of people that grows.
What I just hope for is that the growing awareness and the growing resistance to the ongoing crisis of climate change that we experience at this moment has a lasting effect of cutting through. Some have called it cynicism. I call it nihilism. I call it nihilism for us to allow ESCO to prioritize its own short-term gain at the expense of all our long-term futures. And, you know, if there's a legacy that I hope to see left behind here, it's a lasting awareness that we are, in fact, all on this rock together, and we all rise and fall as one when it comes to protecting our natural earth and as far as ensuring a future for all mankind. That's what's at stake here. That's, you know, really all it is. This is, if one thing can be said to really affect all of us, it's this.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
And we are back live in the studio after that great in-depth pre-recorded story on ESCO by Jimmy Tardy. And I just want to remind you that after the next recorded story, it's going to last about 20 minutes, we will be taking phone calls, so the phone lines will be open. Please give us a call if you have something to say at 503-231-8187.
All right, and now we're going to go to a piece that Joe Lino did, a follow-up on the 1 Billion Rising march and rally that took place last week. Let's go to that now.
Last Thursday, February 14th, V-Day, 1 Billion Rising held a global uprising protesting violence against women and girls. On last month's Occupy Radio show, I spoke with Elmira Rodriguez, one of the organizers of 1 Billion Rising PDX, about what local actions would happen. I caught up with her again a few days after the event to get her views on how the day went.
Hello, Elmira.
Hello, Joe.
So, you were one of the key members putting on the big event. As near as I could tell, it went off pretty well. How do you feel about it?
I'm very, very happy and very pleased with the way things went. The biggest pressure of the day and the biggest anxiety, of course, for the organizing team was whether or not the march was going to go off without police conflict and police interaction. And it did go very well, regardless of the fact that we did not file for a permit.
Right. I think a lot of people there were remarking on that same fact, actually, that they tended to be very hands-off that day.
Right. Well, we had kept our kept our boundary with the Portland Police Bureau. They insisted and insisted up until the day before that we apply for a permit, at which we refused. We let them know that we would be willing to consider any requests that they had outside of permitting the event. And they did have a few, which we contemplated and then gave them our responses back. And we also had a few requests of them, which they contemplated and didn't respond verbally, but on the day of showed us that they were complying with our requests. So I think it had a lot to do with the fact that we gave a very thoughtful response of why we were not going to file for a permit. It wasn't anarchist in nature. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't smash the state per se, but it was a very thoughtful, deliberate response of the reasons why we were not going to get a permit. And the ability to point to the fact that women have been asking for permission for so many things, and in our minds, a permit equals asking for permission to stop being raped and burned alive and accused of witchery and gang raped, you know, we should not have to file for a permit for this. So we held that line all the way to the end.
It seemed like Idle No More was a perfect fit for joining you all on this event. Any response from them on that day or since how they felt about how it went?
Yeah, so our conversation continues. You know, I mean, I made some really close connections with a lot of women through the organizing efforts for 1 Billion Rising, many of them in the Idle No More PDX community. And, you know, we're just sharing information and we're sharing how our communities have responded to this day. And I'm getting lots of reports from the Idle No More movement that it helped empower their movement quite a bit as well. So, you know, mutually beneficial relationships all around. And I was really glad to have made the connections with Idle No More PDX because, I mean, it's Native communities that feel the effects of violence against women more than any other community. So I'm very glad to have made those connections.
What are some of your most vivid or fondest memories from that day?
The most vivid memory that I will keep with me, and I compare it to other marches, was when we started to flow into the street. You know, when you're on an unpermitted march and you first break out of your rally point and flow into the street, you are always met with that line of officers. You are always met with, you know, the battle begins of we will take the streets. No, you won't. And that was absent that day. And we flowed into the streets by the hundreds, and there was no resistance to that. There was nothing, there was no point of conflict. So that was my most vivid memory.
Yeah, I remember seeing nothing but foot patrol. There were no bikes, no motorcycles, no riot gear at all. Just a handful of police marching along with us, and they seemed very relaxed.
I think it definitely goes to show that we, over the last year and a half, have learned how to organize these things. We've learned how to march. We've learned how to mind our manners in the streets, or so to speak, right? And we don't necessarily need bike police or riot police alongside us preemptively to get us to control our march. We have put in peacekeepers and all the and bike swarm and all these other tools that we have at our disposal now to help these marches go smoothly. And you know, we would see a decrease in the police conflict, you know, if they removed the police presence at our marches.
Have you had time to even think about the future? Any future plans? I mean, I know you're always active. Is there any other big event on the horizon?
For 1 Billion Rising PDX, again, the community and the connections that we've made, we've all agreed that we want to keep those connections and keep pushing forward. We think that we might have found a niche, you know, and if you look in all of our other marches, you're always met with that police resistance, and we want to kind of examine and figure out what was different about this time because we did not permit. And so, I mean, it goes to show that the Portland Police Bureau does have the ability to make the decision to be hands-off on our marches. They can make that choice. So figuring out and analyzing what it was that for this event and then try to institute that for other marches and rallies and events that we plan, you know, it might just be that, you know, women-led movements, women-organized movements and marches that are mostly made up of women seem to have the ability to make the police force here in Portland hesitant to use force. So how can we use that to our strategic advantage in pushing not only feminist agenda, but, you know, environmentalism agenda, Native communities' rights agenda? How do we use that to our advantage? That's what's on the horizon. So we'll be meeting in the next couple of days to talk about what we want to do next. I know one thing that's on our horizon, Officer Todd Wyatt, if nobody knows the story of him, he was found guilty of inappropriately touching his female coworkers. And then after an independent police review board let Chief Reese know that he should fire him, Police Chief Reese refused that suggestion and demoted him, actually, to a detective within the sexual crimes unit. And it was only after outcry from the community that he decided that that would not be the best place for him. So we're still looking at Officer Todd Wyatt, and we want to make it known that he's kind of in the target on our horizon. He's going to be somebody that we're targeting. We would like to see him removed from any position of legal authority. So I know that's on the horizon. Also, we're trying to really figure out a way to bring on the healing. We're talking about a demand, an end to violence against women, but that doesn't erase the generations, the decades. I mean, all of the pain and suffering that women have already experienced, that doesn't erase. So how do we heal and move forward and create an end to violence against women? So those are the things that we're talking about. And I think we got our very first post 1 billion rising workshop scheduled. And that will be on Friday, February 23rd at the Hawthorne Wellness Center. And that information is up on our Facebook page. So if you go to 1 Billion Rising PDX on the Facebook page and click on our events tab, you'll see all the information there. And you can also reach us at 1billionrisingpdx@gmail.com. Just ask us, if you missed the information or you're not on the Facebook, email us and we'll give you that information. So lots of workshops in the future, lots of direct actions being planned.
So. 1 Billion Rising PDX went off great. Of course, this was a worldwide event. Mm-hmm. Were you able to check in on any of the other activities going on?
Yeah, if we were throughout the day on Thursday, the social media was just going crazy with the different actions all around the globe. And the night before, actually, we were getting ready. I was also part of the food team, so we're prepping and getting all of our baked goods ready for the next day. And we're live streaming what's going on in the Philippines, what's going on in South Africa. These events took place all over the globe. For the most part, they got coverage, independent coverage. One thing that we would have liked to see was more, mass media coverage and mainstream news media coverage. And I will just note, too, for our own experiences here in Portland, there were quite a few local news media covering the event, yet hardly any of that news coverage made it to the news. And, that's because there was an absence of police conflict. And it just shows that the only things that are going to make the news about the events we do, or, the nightly mainstream news, are these marches that end in police brutality, end in police violence. And that was, that was actually really, really sad to us. So we're hoping that as we move forward and actually progress in the work that we're doing, we'll get more coverage because it deserves it.
Do you mind telling me why you're here today in the
yeah,
march here?
Because it's an amazing thing that all over the world today, in almost every single country in the world, people are getting together and saying that it's not okay for there to be violence against women anywhere. And that's just a profound experience to feel that it's not just in Portland, it's everywhere. And that's why we're here today.
Fantastic. Thank you. All right, so what brings you today's march and rally?
Well, we're a mother. My mom's visiting from out of town,
oh,
and
yeah.
So we got involved with the flash mob, and we just care a lot about. I'm really concerned about women in the Congo and women all over the world who are just systematically, tormented and pointedly brutalized, and it's horrendous, and it needs to stop around the world. So I'm walking in honor of all of the women who are rebuilding their lives, and all the women who have lost their lives in the violence, like in wars and just day to day, like women being really treated like third class citizens, even though they're holding together a lot of families and a lot of communities. They're like the roots and the tree system,
Right.
So I'm here to march for all of us raising up and building strong trees.
As noted, there were many actions and events that took place all day in Portland as well as around the world. And here in Portland, everything started with a rally at Director's Park. There was tribal dance by I Don't Know More, various speeches and testimonial, and one woman energetically recited an original poem that brought an outstanding ovation from the crowd. The author's name is Emily Miller, who's been a very active participant in Occupy Portland. She agreed to come into the studio and give a repeat performance of the work she recited so well on V-Day. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
So, Emily, you were a part of Occupy Portland from pretty much the beginning, is that right?
Yeah.
And you were in the camps.
Mm-hmm. I slept at the camps for 6 weeks.
And everyone there pretty much pitched in on different committees and different sections of keeping the camp alive.
Functioning,
right. What was it you did?
I was on the Peace and Safety Committee. So I would walk around and advocate for people who needed help or did a lot of like conflict resolution and things like that.
And you stayed active since the eviction night.
Yeah. Yeah. I am super interested in homeless advocacy, so I volunteer with Sisters of the Road with the Houseless Bill of Rights that we're trying to get through the legislature in 2015 or 2014. I've been involved in like volunteering with different shelters and different feeds and lots of things like that. So trying to stay with that like that emphasis and activism.
And 1 Billion Rising was not the first march since the since the eviction that you've been part of.
Right. I feel like I've been at too many marches.
And yet you came out to 1 Billion Rising. Mm-hmm. Before you went, did you already have it in mind to recite the poem that you wrote?
Yeah, like the night before. And I had written this poem originally as a rap. But I had written this like 3 years ago, and I've never performed it before, and it's kind of perfect for the theme, or was perfect for the theme of 1 Billion Rising, so I decided that, I don't know, just on the spur of the moment that I'd do it, and I followed through, surprisingly.
Like you said, I thought it was the perfect stage for your piece. So, whenever you're ready, please.
Okay.
Have at it.
I could identify with my image and say that I am nothing more than beautiful, but wouldn't that just make me a fool? Machine tool waiting to be used because my self-concept was abused by every male figure till they left me stupidly confused. I want to reclaim my power. I don't need you to wilt my flower. My body is a sacred entity protected by my own individuality. But you wouldn't want to know me if I had an opinion or any opposition to your controlling position. You're not going to be on top of me. A missionary trainee? Ooh, baby, that ain't me. I'm the one on a mission. You better ask for my permission before you treat me like you're paying a commission, because I'm not gonna be with that definition of a male who don't have any self-control and treats women like they're nothing more than a commodity, because I'm more than a woman or a man. Let's not repeat a gender Ku Klux Klan. We have the potential to take a stand and with our right hand put it to our heart and command that we are equal and there will be no sequel to this endless disrespect. I am not an object for you to select. I'm a person first, not a woman submersed. I have an education because I'm a being with an aspiration to show the next generation that the world is their stage. They manifest their own cage or the new developmental age. I'm sick of men telling me what it's all about because I already figured it out. Women give power to the head of their house because it's their spouse, but the power is in our hands and we choose to drive our minivans, complying to gender socialized demands. But I know that I can change this fate because this gender thing is not innate. Nature versus nurture, which one will you choose? Stand up and refuse to be a victim. Show your kids that you have dictum against the that is controlling you, because I can see right through the obelisk that's not going to be in my bedroom. A broom, I am so much more than my womb. This is our chance to change the missionary position and re-identify with a new definition.
After all, I'm forever in your debt, and
Yes, Woman by John Lennon. We've got a lot of music in the pipeline for you. So far today, we've heard from Joni Mitchell, her song Big Yellow Taxi. We're going to go now to a tune by the Pretenders, My City Was Gone. But before we do that, we want to remind you that the phone lines are open. The number is 503-231-8187. Call, let us know what you've got going on. If you want to ask some questions about maybe Occupy Portland and what's been happening on that scene, we'll be happy to have you on the phone. We've got some music lined up, but if you make us run through it all, we might start singing. I'm not sure you want that. 503-231-8187. My City Was Gone, the Pretenders, and we have the phone lines open, and I understand we have a caller, Jester. Jester, what's up?
Just calling to say I love all the humans in there and all the people fighting for justice that are listening in, and I leave you only with No Guns for Men, people, and if anyone's got time, try to free music and stop America every now and then. Lots of love, people. Keep rocking.
Right on.
Love
Thanks,
you too, Jester.
Jester.
Thank you.
All right, so we got some more music for you. The phone lines are open, 503-231-8187. We're going to go to...
Yeah, if you are an activist out there and you got something going on and you want to announce it, call in. We'll be happy to help.
And this should be Marvin Gaye's Mercy, Mercy Me.
All things
Yes, indeed. Marvin Gaye, Mercy, Mercy Me. We got another caller on the line. LJ, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Doing right. Great. Thanks for calling.
Okay, well, thank you for the show. I'm with the Elders Caucus of Occupy.
Great to hear from you guys. What do you got for us?
Well, just to let folks know that we do meet every Friday from 3 to 5 at the Friends Meeting House on 43rd and Stark. So
43rd and Stark, what's there?
That's the Friends Meeting House.
Okay.
All right. And we're a really exciting group of elders. We're working on a lot of projects. And for elderly people who feel like there's no place for them in the Occupy movement, please come on down. We have a lot to offer, and we stand in total solidarity with the Occupy movement we have from Jump Street, and it makes our hearts feel good. It gives us hope and it gives us optimism about the future.
It's so glad, LJ, to hear you saying all that.
And one more thing, a very big shout out to the Occupy Sandy movement back east, who were able to organize as a result of Occupy Wall Street and are still feeding people, giving them clothing, and providing all kinds of needed services when the traditional services like the Red Cross and whoever are not doing anything.
Yeah, that's right. LJ, we got another caller on the line.
Okay, go for it. Thank you so much for the show.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling.
And we're going now to Linda. Linda, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. I just wanted to call in and say thank you for the show. It was really good to hear. I love to hear the reporting directly from the action. So one at the Oregon Historical Association, I thought they did a great educational talking about ESCO. I once had a husband who worked at ESCO. And it's a really dirty, dirty, hard place to work. I also just went about the 1 Billion Rising. It's just great to hear all of the local activities that have come out of the last year and are burgeoning forward. So I wanted to just thank you for it.
Thank you so much. And let me just give my own thanks, because it's been a real pleasure to be able to bring this show to you out there and do that on the scene reporting. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it brings it alive for us. It's really great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. And that's true. It wasn't until today, actually, that I realized we'd been at this for 1 year. And when we started a year ago, we started with a little panic.
F-29.
F-29. We recorded an action live and ran to the studio as quick as we could to get through the material and play it for everybody. And it was our first experience, and we're still here a year after, and we want to thank all of you for listening in and calling.
Yeah, that's right. So, for February 20th, 2013, I'm Jimmy Tardy.
I'm Joe Lino.
And remember,
Occupy!
Sunrise, what about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing feels? Is there a time? What about all the things that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the blood we've shed before? Did you ever stop this notice, this crying earth, this weeping shore?
This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
KABU is proud to sponsor two special Black History events at Portland State University on Thursday, February 21st, featuring East Coast MC, educator, and community organizer Hassan Salam. First is a multimedia presentation on the history of Black music titled From Spiritual to Hip Hop. This will take place at noon at the Smith Memorial Union on the second floor. The second event is a hip hop show with local progressive artists Sirens Echo and March 4th. This will happen at 7 p.m. at the Food for Thought Cafe in the basement of Smith Memorial Union. That's two special events with Hassan Salam in celebration of Black History Month on Thursday, February 21st at Portland State University. More information can be found at kabu.fm/Hassan2013.
Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m., KABU will continue its live broadcasts from the Illahi Lecture Series with Buck Parker, Strategic Advisor at Earth Justice. He will address the question of who owns our environment in a talk called Who Owns You and What You Can Do About It. The speech will take place at the First Congregational Church in downtown Portland and will be broadcast live on KABU. Again, that's Buck Parker, Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m., here on KBOO Portland.
And you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station on 90.7 FM. Also heard around the world at www.kabu.fm. Up next is a Black History Month special in place of Hard Knock Radio tonight. And it features myself, Sequoyna Wright, and a special guest, Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson, coming up right now.